This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn.
It's time for Gervy's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervy. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. Joined today by his co-host, radio personality, and television host, Carrie Kasem. Carrie brings a fresh, real perspective to the intersection of law and life, turning Murphy's Law upside down. And now, here are Alan Gervy and Carrie Kasem.
Good afternoon, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KBC.com. I am Alan Gervy, the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, the managing partner of that firm.
Are you?
I am so disoriented. I have no. I'm speaking like in different language here.
We're in a whole nother studio. You're so far away from me.
Do you know I've been saying that line for 7 years? I'm not sure why it's a stupid line, but I've been saying it for 7 years, and this is the first time that I screwed it up because we're in a different studio.
No,
today.
It's true. I look at Wayman. You can barely see him.
He's so far away.
This is crazy.
He's not a small man.
And
look,
Evelyn and I can't share like dirty looks when you start to make fun of me because she's so far away.
You are far away. Are you there?
I'm here.
Evelyn Gervy, my mom is here. So let me try that again. I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervy, and Wynn, have been for many years, and I'm here stupidly to manage your life. And Carrie's with me.
Yes.
You haven't been here for a while, and you correctly stated that this is a new studio.
It is. It's huge. It's really nice.
It's actually where all the big guns do their radio shows.
True.
Actually, KBC, do they have any big guns left?
Oh.
Well, Ben Shapiro.
There's a lot of people who left. Look, a lot of people left, but they got a great lineup.
Yeah.
There's just not
Phillips,
a ton of
John
people.
Phillips.
Yeah.
He sits, I sit in his chair. I feel like I'm a political genius sitting in his chair. And you have the KBC logo behind you. I don't. I was nice enough to give that to you.
Well, I actually asked you. I said you'd look great here because the signage is behind you, but you said no.
I'm behind. There's a closet behind
there's
you.
A cabinet,
there's cabinets and it looks terrible. But this is kind of like how I feel at home, you know, just kind of stuck in a corner.
It's a great way to feel.
So we have a great show, and we are going to manage your life because today we are commemorating Valentine's Day week because it was Valentine's Day just passed.
This is the longest Valentine's Day ever. I feel like people keep drawing it out because it's the weekend now.
So it's like February 29th. It only happens every 4 years. So it's like the longest Valentine's Day ever. That's why it's longer. And we welcome my mom, Evelyn Gervy, here. She's visiting from Toronto. You'll be going back tomorrow.
Right.
So that'll be nice. We've had a great time with you.
It'll be nice when I go back, right?
It's horrible.
No, the kids, Hudson, Harper, Nancy, we've all loved having you here.
And I love being here.
And I'm glad you're here today because we're going to talk a little bit before we get to our main featured guest. We're going to talk a little bit today about love and sacrifices and values. I want to call it, and Wayman, can you get some music or something? Because this may be a segment that we do over and over. Gervy's Laws of Life. Gervy's Laws, get it? Like, this show's called Gervy's Law, but we're talking about Gervy's Laws of Life with Evelyn Gervy right now, here.
Wow.
No, you're not that impressed, are you?
Does she know what she's doing?
I feel like I'm la, 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 la.
No, that's Wayman's job to do the music. You can play the fiddle, as you like to call it, the fiddle. Later in the show, we have Michael Pack, and we're going to talk about values with Evelyn Gervy and also with Michael Pack because it may surprise you. This new documentary that has taken the world by storm, created equal Clarence Thomas in his own words. So this is the first time that Clarence Thomas, Supreme Court Justice, has really spoken in the media really freely. He had 30 hours of interviews with Michael Pack, and Michael Pack of Manifold Productions has put together this really interesting documentary. And we're going to hear a lot about it in the second half of our show. Before we get to Michael Pack and Clarence Justice, Clarence Thomas, who has different values, I would think, than my mom. Wouldn't you agree that the justice of the Supreme Court, you know, being very conservative, I'm not sure. You've been more of a family person. So let's talk a little bit about this, Carrie, because it's important to think about love and think about caring. And one of the things, Mom, that you have spent so much time in over your lifetime is thinking of others, making sacrifices, doing things that you don't necessarily want to do. But maybe you do. Every time I remember when we were kids, when someone moved in the neighborhood, you marched over right away with a marble cake and you gave him a marble cake.
Oh, really?
A bundt cake.
Oh.
Marble. Well, we should welcome them to the neighborhood.
That's so sweet. That's, you know, we do that in our neighborhood and mm-hmm. the new neighbors came in and everybody, we didn't know this, came over and sent or gave them something. And they said, we've never been in a neighborhood like this. Like, you all came over and greeted us with something nice or flowers or food. And I guess it doesn't happen anymore.
And the thing, though, is that it establishes a way of thinking of others. Because I've grown up, every time I go to someone's house, I'm always thinking, you know, my mom always did it. I'm always bringing things. Wherever I go, I never forget. I'm always thinking of other people. And I think it's based on that. And it was an amazing support. And I know you had that too, Carrie, from parents, because a lot of parents aren't as supportive of their children as maybe they should be. And I remember, Mom, you always being in my corner, regardless of what would happen. You were supportive regardless of the situation. Even if I screwed up, you would be there and say, it's okay. People screw up. Why is that so important? Like, why do you think doing that for your kids?
Love for your kids, your family, and I think they give it back to you.
That's true. We have.
But back in the day, you know, and a comedian does a whole skit on this. I don't know if you've seen it, Alan.
No.
It's a guy who's like, you know, back in the day, you know, when your parents, your grandparents, you hear a knock on the door. It's like, oh, who is that? And you run to the door and you can't wait to see who it is. And nowadays, somebody knocks on the door. You're like, shh, shh, don't say anything. Don't let anybody know we're home. There's fear. You don't want anybody, you don't want a neighbor coming over to bother you?
Do you know the comedy? Is it Jackie Mason? Is that?
Oh my God, you're terrible.
Oh, Jackie.
No, he doesn't do that.
It's Art Carney.
I forget what he says. I used to know his routine.
You used to do the routine every day I came home from school. You did the Jackie Mason routine. And also on Valentine's Day, you always made that chocolate Valentine cake. I'll never forget.
I have the heart-shaped pan.
The heart-shaped pan. Yeah, and you would decorate it. We never had a Valentine's Day without that.
Chocolate cake with chocolate icing. And I'd buy the little cinnamon hearts, you know, the red Valentine.
I hated the cinnamon hearts.
Well, you didn't have to eat them. It was just for decoration.
Couldn't you have put like little chocolate chips on or something?
No.
I had to have hearts.
She always had the cake.
And when I was away in college, away after college, she would send me a piece in a foil, a piece of the chocolate Valentine cakes. Every Valentine day, I would get it in the mail. It was stale and everything, but she meant...
That's so sweet.
I used to send parcels, and I remember one time, and it was cooked food or something.
Yeah.
It got lost, do you remember?
Yeah. And I
think when it came, it was really smelly.
Good. Yeah, it wasn't very good.
But she sent
food all the time and used to send notes every week. I mean, when I was in college and after college, when I moved to Chicago, I lived in Toronto, I lived in L.A., just about everywhere. And I would get a note or a card, and the card in the mail, just out of nothing, would say, just sending you a smile or just thinking about you.
I never got any of that stuff. I was in boarding school for years. Kids got care packages and stuff. I got nada. I think once or twice my mom or dad sent me something.
No, I used to send just a postcard if I didn't want to write a letter, just to know that we're thinking of him and how are you and, you know, how's it going?
That's so nice.
Postcards.
And it meant a lot. You know, when you think about values and thinking of others, I remember how happy I was when I would get these little cards, and some of them like would have a little doggy on them or something, and would say some kind of cute line, and you would send something. Sometimes you'd send a candy or a newspaper clipping or something. I mean, that isn't done anymore because of email now.
My dad would send me newspaper clippings nonstop. Oh, look at this. Take a look at this. And I wish as a kid I would have spent more time reading it and really taking it in, because he was so, I mean, it was all about health and wellness.
Yeah.
And, now everybody's talking about it. You know,
but isn't it something different when you get it in the mail versus someone sending you a yes. link online? I mean, just to get it from your dad it's or to get personal. It from my mom, it was so personal with yeah. her sign. She would always sign "Love, Mom,"
yes.
or something
it's
like that,
nice.
Or whatever your name was.
It was always. It was mom.
And it was very positive. Sometimes she just sent positive thoughts. That's one of the things, you know, when you talk about doing things for others, being positive for other people, not just for yourself, but being able to see goodness and positivity in anything that you do, that's something that I think was a real strong value of yours, Mom.
Thank you. I'm sitting here thinking of what I thought or did.
Well, I think it comes naturally, and that's one of the problems with people today, where kindness and being positive doesn't come naturally.
Mm-mm.
You almost have to catch yourself. And back in the day, and I think, you know, I'm fortunate that my mom and dad were both like this, that they were so supportive and positive, and if I failed, they were there to pick up the pieces without judging me. There was no judging, saying, wow, you really screwed up.
The problem nowadays is people are unaware of themselves, like, completely. So even if you tell them what's going on, they don't get it, they don't see it. There was one woman who sent me a diatribe about what a horrible person I was. Never met me, didn't know me. I guess wow. she saw 48 hours with my dad and was decided that my stepmom was right and that I had done all these horrible things. So instead of vetting me or looking through stuff I'd done or anything about my background, she didn't even know I had a job, right? She went off on how I was a gold digger and this and that. Didn't know I'd been working my whole life, but just all these wrong facts that went after me pretty badly. And it doesn't bother me. I went to her Twitter site and on her big banner was her and her husband smiling, and it said, "Kindness matters." Okay, so I never do this, but I took a screenshot of it. I put it up, and I put what she wrote me, and I said, "This has got to be, like, a joke." And I was laughing, right? And I'm like, "Really, lady?" I'm like, "Come on." And she took her site down.
This is negative.
Took her site down.
We're trying to be positive here.
That was a positive move. I did a good one. You should high-five me. It was the funniest
thing. How did
thing.
You turn this positive talking to this
because
negative
person?
Because
I said people
person.
Aren't aware that they're not kind. Like, they're talking about how important kindness
care.
Is.
They don't care.
They don't get it. They don't get it. It's like complete zombies out there. They don't get what they're doing.
But don't you think, Mom, that it comes naturally and, you know, people just don't, or maybe it's from your upbringing or something? Why did you become so focused on doing the right thing and being supportive for your kids and for your friends and family?
I think it's just a normal thing. You don't even think about it that you're doing it. You do it from the heart because you care. And you do anything for your kids and also for my parents, you know. My mother was hard of hearing, and some people wouldn't even phone her because they couldn't,
she couldn't hear
much.
Oh, see, I liked it better on the phone with my grandma because she could hear me. She could turn her phone up. When I was with her, it was like, couldn't hear me.
No, you're right. No one would call my grandmother because she couldn't hear.
Yeah, even with the hearing
and,
aid.
You know, I grew up hearing you screaming into the phone. But it was nice. I mean, and then I would go visit her because I felt bad. You feel for people who may not have everything that make them comfortable.
She was such a good person, and she couldn't see good, but she was a good sewer. And so she would try to make something, even she'd have a magnifying glass with her glasses, you know, if she wanted to make her grandchild or to write something, a note. She was a wonderful person.
I'm going to cry
in a minute.
You did the same thing. You used to do some knitting. You knitted for all your grandchildren. You made them scarves.
That's what I could make.
I did crochet.
No, I didn't crochet. I made scarves. And then I made some doll's clothes or something for my daughter. But it was mostly scarves.
All right. Well,
but I like knitting.
We have to take a quick break. We'll spend a few more minutes with Evelyn Gervie on her Gervie's Laws of Life. We want to talk about some of your quotes, like we take one day at a time and make a life for yourself. That's just a little bit of a teaser when we come back, because we're talking about the Valentine's Day that has just passed and how we have love filled in the heart and how it comes naturally. Hearing from my mom, you hear how it is just something that's inside that you should always consider and think about without going to this negative perspective that is certainly so profound today in our world. You're listening to Gervie's Law on KBC right here.
I'm here with Alan, myself. Carrie and Evelyn. See you soon. Yeah. Roam if you want to. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on KBC, and Carrie commented that I'm not on my game today. Thank you very much.
I did not say that. I said, Alan, are you a bit tired? And he said, yes, I'm exhausted.
In a few minutes, we're going to speak to Michael Pack, who came out with this new documentary. A lot of people talking about it. Created equal Clarence Thomas, in his own words, the justice of the Supreme Court. Michael Pack spent about 30 hours talking to Clarence Thomas, someone who is known to be tight-lipped and not to talk a lot to the media. But this is a documentary that gets into his life and his ideas. And it's very, very interesting, and it's poignant as well. Before we get to Michael Pack, we are talking. Speaking of packing, you know, Michael is coming on, and I remember when I was going to college. I used to take early morning flights, and I'd be at home, and I'd wake up maybe at 5 or 6 in the morning to get ready for flight. My mom had been up already for probably 2 hours, and she was on her hands and knees in my suitcases taking these foiled pouches that had masking tape with what they were, you know, some kind of food on them, cake or cookies or whatever. And she was packing them into this my suitcase, and it was and I couldn't understand. It was 4 o'clock in the morning. What were you doing, Mom, getting up at 4 o'clock in the morning packing my suitcases with food?
She loves you.
And the slugs, those ice things, the ice packs. Do you remember you getting up in the middle of the night? It's like, why did you, most people would sleep. Why did you do that?
Well, I think if I did it the night before, the ice packs wouldn't be good, you know.
I'm not talking about the technical aspects of it. That's true, though. If you did it the night before. I meant, why did you wake up in the middle of the night when you could have been sleeping and told your son to do it himself?
No, it was worth it. Everything was worth it. I mean, for your children.
You know, it's funny.
I wish there were a lot more moms like you, Evelyn. You're a good mom. Yeah,
I'm going to sit here and cry.
You always cry. I mean, I wish I could share, and I wish everyone had a mom like my mom, because to be able to, like, the fun that she had when after my dad passed away, you went on these trips. You went on cruise after cruise, and you were dancing and singing by yourself, and you weren't detracted from anything. You just said, you're going to make the best of it. You always told me, make a life for yourself. You don't know what life is going to give you, but whatever it gives you, you make a life for yourself.
Yes.
You know, there's so many curveballs that we get in life. And I always remember Mom saying, you know what? Okay, if I'm going to travel, I want to travel. I'm going to do it by myself. I have no one to go with. I'll just make the best of it.
Yeah, I always chose a cruise. Because you meet people, and then I'd get to know a little group or the people at my table.
Yeah.
You know, you have the same people. And sometimes it worked out, and sometimes it didn't.
Did you transfer tables when it didn't?
Yes, she did.
I think I
did. Okay, good.
She knew how to talk to
good,
them.
Good.
There was one guy who used my napkin or something. I don't know, nauseating. And I left.
Well, I wouldn't stay at a table with someone using my napkin.
That's kind of weird.
Especially if it was on my lap.
Yeah, that's kind of weird.
He stuck his face in your lap?
No,
glad you changed tables. But, you know, you know, when you think about things that become overwhelming, because I've had this positive influence from my mom through my whole life. And when you think of things, sometimes are overwhelming. I always remember my mom saying that we take one day at a time. I don't know what that means. What does that mean, we take one day at a time?
You live, you finish today, you do what you have to do, and whatever comes up, don't think of tomorrow, because it gets overwhelming. If you have problems and you think of the next day, just finish today and hope it works out and start again tomorrow.
It's like present time. You're here now. You're not worrying about the future. You're not worrying about the past. You're here. You're living life. Very few people actually do that, I think. I don't know very many people who live in the here and now.
And the thing about it does become overwhelming for a lot of people when they're thinking about what lies ahead. Mm-hmm. And you can't really do anything necessarily about something that may lie ahead because you don't know what's going to happen.
My dad was constantly worried about everything. I'm like, Dad, it hasn't happened. Why are you worrying? If it does happen, what's this worry going to do? You're ruining your life. He was so worried about us all the time, worried about everything. And he had nothing. And well, he had things to worry about, but not the things he did.
Mom, you know what you should have done? You should have called into the Top 40 and said, America's there Top 40, go. And said, Casey Kasem, listen to me. We take one day at a time.
I didn't know him at the time.
Yeah, he didn't take phone calls.
No.
What, a long distance? Dedication?
His show was taped.
Those damn long distance dedications.
I guess she could have written in. She could have written in and said, listen.
Yeah.
I never did that.
No. Yeah, you should have and said, Casey, you need to take one day. But it's really a great philosophy to be able to kind of stay within yourself versus getting so stressed. I see it in my work. Go ahead, Mom.
I'm saying it's overwhelming and it's no good for your health. And, you know, you do things, one thing, and then tomorrow you have another worry or whatever.
You know, there's so many obstacles that life puts in front of us for whatever reason. And it's really motivating to know. And, you know, and I want to thank my mom, obviously, for coming in today because she's going back to Toronto tomorrow. But it's so nice to hear her talk about everything that she has done and formulated. And she may not have become a justice of the Supreme Court.
Not yet.
Not yet. But at the same time, there's so many values and so many priorities that she's had in her life that have made for such a successful having your kids successful with your kids, love, showing, caring, and really focusing on what's important in life. And that's what we talk about on Valentine's Day, not just giving a chocolate heart, even though you've done a lot with those chocolate cakes on Valentine's Day.
I had this heart-shaped pan.
Yeah, you know, the thing about it is that you didn't bring one in today, and Carrie's really upset because she's heard so much about the heart-shaped
pan. To have a gluten-free chocolate cake without sugar and in a heart-shaped pan. Yeah,
I'll just bring you the pan.
You make it yourself.
Thanks, guys.
All right, Mom. Thanks for being with us. We're going to shift gears after the break. Is that okay with you?
That's fine.
You're ready for that?
I'm happy to be here, and I shall listen.
Okay.
And be quiet.
After the break, we're going to talk to Michael Pack. The documentary is called Created Equal, Clarence Thomas, in his own words. Really a lot of buzz about this documentary. You'll want to hear what Michael Pack has to say about talking for over 30 hours with the Justice of the Supreme Court, who really doesn't speak much to anyone. So that's coming up right here on Gervie's Law. It's Talk Radio 790 KABC. Yes, you are listening to Gervie's Law. I'm Alan Gervie. I'm here with Carrie Kasem, and we are going to talk about a documentary now called Creative Equal, Clarence Thomas, in his own words. Washington Post said it is a marvel of filmmaking that 2 hours pass so quickly. Time magazine said offers viewers rare insight into the mind of a justice known for his reticence on the public stage. And the Washington Examiner said everyone interested in the truth and a great story should go and see it. We have on the line with us now Michael Pack, who is the president of Manifold Productions, and that's an independent film and television production company he founded himself in 1977. He has written and directed and produced so many award-winning documentaries, and he has a real award winner here. Michael, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
It's great to have you on. Michael, I got to ask you, you've said that Justice Thomas's life is inspiring. In this polarized world we live in today, you have to tell us, how do you convince those on the other end of the spectrum of his ideologies and beliefs to be inspired by Clarence Thomas's life?
Well, first of all, it is called, as you said, Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in his own words, because The idea of the film is Clarence Thomas tells his story. I mean, I'm interviewing him, as you also said, I interviewed him for over 30 hours. But he's looking right at camera, telling what happened to him, the way he experienced it from the beginning to today. And, you know, people of all political points of view have seen it. Those that didn't agree with him before maybe still didn't agree with him at the end. But I think they understood him and appreciated his story. And his personal story is inspiring, whatever you think about his politics. You know, he was born in dire poverty in the segregated South and went from there to the highest court in the land. And it's at the first level, it's just a great success story and Horatio Alger story. So, I mean, that aspect, I think, is inspiring. And I think his ideas are provocative, even if you don't agree with them.
Michael, how did you get... you know, the justice in the first place. How did you get him to sit and talk to you?
Well, you know, we had heard through mutual friends that he wanted to tell his story, that other people were telling it for him in ways he didn't like. And that had gone on for a long time. And I met with him, my wife is my business partner. And I hadn't actually at that point know that much about him, not much more than the very contentious confirmation hearings with Anita Hill's charges. Mm-hmm. But after meeting him and doing the research, I did find his actual personal story inspiring. I mean, he was born in Pinpoint, a Gullah-speaking area outside of Georgia, so on the coast. So English wasn't even his first language, which is, I think, already surprising. And his father left before he could remember, leaving a hole in his life. And then his mother, when he was six, moved to Savannah, where he experienced, as he called it, he went from rural poverty to urban squalor, and there he didn't have enough to eat. He was cold in the winter. You know, he had didn't have an indoor toilet, only an outdoor toilet. It flushed in the neighbor's yard, and theirs flushed in his yard. I mean, a kind of repulsive, difficult living circumstances, hard for us to imagine today, and this is in segregated Savannah. So, you know, just from that beginning, and then he has a lot of twists and turns in his life. I mean, he goes from there. His mother brings him to her father, his grandfather, to raise because she realizes she can't take care of him and his brother. And there his grandfather gives him tough love and hard work and sends him to parochial school, you know, segregated at that time but run by Irish nuns. And he loved them, and he thrived. And then for a while he wanted to be a priest and entered the seminary. Another thing that's surprising, I think, about him. And the seminaries were all white or just desegregating. He was one of the first African Americans. And there he experienced racism, you know, culminating in 1968 when he was watching TV when the day Martin Luther King Jr. was shot. And one of the white seminarians said, "I hope that son of a bitch dies."
Wow.
Who was he referring to?
Martin Luther King.
To Martin Luther King. That's right. So that was pretty shocking. Shocking even to hear it now. And it was shocking to Justice Thomas at the time. So he just thought, he already thought the church wasn't doing enough for civil rights. And he lost his vocation. He told his grandfather, kicked him out. And then he went through a period of being, as he says, an angry black man. And he ended up having to go to where we can get a scholarship, which was Holy Cross. And there he was, you know, hung around with black radicals, and they supported Angela Davis, and they invited the Panthers to campus, and he went through this period of radicalism, and then it's his journey away from that. So it's a very complicated and I think interesting story.
Let me ask you this too. In the trailer, it blew my mind that he said, and I, you know, I'm a little young, but I remember these hearings. I remember Anita Hill, but it blew my mind that said this is that people didn't think he was. I don't know, and I'm paraphrasing, but black enough, or the right black man, or that he didn't understand, you know, the blacks That's in right. America. And this is how the man grew up. I mean, you can't.
That's right.
I mean, it doesn't make sense. Did they just not do their homework? Did he not talk about how he grew up and what he went through?
But Carrie, it's not just about what you went through. Michael, tell us why, you know, his values and his priorities were not with the stereotypical interests of the black person.
That is exactly right. So, you know, after going through this radical period, he finally rejected those values and ended up his first Republican he voted for was Ronald Reagan in 1980, and he went to work for the Reagan administration. And from that time on, what you said is quite right. He, as he said, he was the wrong black man. He didn't have the values you were supposed to have. He didn't believe in affirmative action anymore. He didn't believe in busing, then a big issue. He didn't have, you know, the civil rights establishment rejected him. And so it didn't matter what he had gone through. He just wasn't, you know, they were going to stereotype him and put him down. And even in the 80s, there was an article about him when he was working in the Reagan administration by Hodding Carter, who had been a high-level official in the Jimmy Carter administration and was a white Southern journalist, wrote a piece in Playboy, no less, saying Justice Thomas, not Justice Thomas yet, but that Justice Thomas was like a chicken-eating preacher gathering crumbs from the white man's table because he worked for Reagan. You know, racist stereotype, which you couldn't apply to anyone left of center, but it was deemed okay for Clarence Thomas. I don't know that you can, and that continued. So what you said, Alan is quite right. It didn't matter what he had gone through. He was didn't have the right opinions.
You know, it's so interesting to hear these stories, and I know you sat with Clarence and his wife Ginny for many hours. We talked about over 30 hours. The documentary is about 2 hours, and I know your wife had said maybe 90 minutes would have been preferable, but you know, and that doesn't, that's only because, you know, there's so much information to get in there, and you squished it into 2 hours. Hearing you now, tell us about some pieces, and I know the editing took for over a year. Tell us about pieces that you were thinking of, that you're thinking of just talking to Carrie right now, that maybe you wanted in there, but of course there just wasn't time.
Well, I mean, one thing I think we go over kind of quickly, you might not agree with this particularly, Alan, and so, you know, we do talk about his jurisprudence and one or two cases that he deals with on the Supreme Court. But I talked to him for over 3 hours about his jurisprudence and how the Supreme Court works. And that's maybe 10 minutes of the film. I'm thinking of doing a larger, like a piece for law schools that where he talks more about that.
That would be amazing.
This happened when I showed it to people who weren't lawyers, they were pretty bored. So.
Yeah, but it's interesting because, you know, he's written over 600 Supreme Court opinions and more than any other of the sitting justices now, probably 30%, working very hard, even though he's famously known for not asking a lot of questions. And I know you deal with that because it's a feature of him. But there are so many areas that seem so interesting to talk about from his perspective, because not a lot of African-American people have reached the Supreme Court and have the opinions that Clarence Thomas does.
Well, yes, he is the second African-American Supreme Court justice after Thurgood Marshall, whom he replaced, who did not share Justice Thomas's views on a lot of issues. I mean, they did on big things like Brown versus Board of Education, of course, but not on the details of things and not on originalism. So that's right. I think it's important for people to hear that voice. I mean, you hear lots of the other voices from the African-American community, which is great, but you don't hear that kind of voice, especially on legal and constitutional issues. And that's why I think it's very important for people, whatever their politics, to go see this film. I myself am conservative, but I went to see RBG. I thought it was really interesting. I think Justice Ginsburg has a lot to say. I was moved by her story to go to your point, Carrie. Even though I didn't agree with her politics, I still found her story moving.
Me too.
You know, it's interesting.
I really, really, I fell in love with her after that movie.
And we had both the producers, the writers of the documentary on our show. Yeah. And interestingly, just like you, Michael, when they talked about Julie and Betsy, when they talked about making the film, they talked just like you are. They weren't talking about her politics per se.
Right.
They were talking about RBG as a person, mm-hmm. as you talk about Clarence Thomas as a person.
Well, that's right. I mean, I hope that we are not so polarized as a nation that we can't be inspired by people who don't exactly share our politics. And
unfortunately, we are. At least what you see on social media, it's horrible.
I really want you to say that again, because that's such an important concept, Michael.
It is.
Well, I take your point, Carrie, that maybe it isn't so, but I do hope that we can be inspired by people's life story whose politics we don't share. And I was inspired by the RBG film, just like you were, and I hope those producers go to see my film and are inspired by Justice Thomas's story, even if they end up not agreeing with him.
The thing with what I've seen is there's a lot of people who are not very sane right now in politics. The common sense is missing. So when you go and look at somebody, you judge them on, you know, their politics and who they, you know, who they're going to vote for, if, you know, if they hate Trump enough or not. It's really a sad day, you know, when you can't look past somebody's political views and really who they are and what they've done. And that's what I see in this country.
But
see
the reaction to this film would suggest that maybe there is a large segment of the population that can do that. Michael, you said that in 30 years of making movies, I've never had an audience where there's so much laughter and crying.
That's right.
What do you
People
mean by
very
that?
Moved. I think they are. I mean, one of the things I found, I mean, I was going to originally do a more traditional documentary and have, you know, 15 people be interviewed from all sorts of places in his life and all political views, but I thought that his own viewpoint would be lost. And he is, in fact, a very good, even though does not speak in all argument or give many interviews, he is, in fact, a very good storyteller and tells his story very movingly and is very open about it. So I think people are moved. I have found that to be so. Now, it is also true that your audience will have to dig to find the movie, right? We're not a huge Hollywood blockbuster, so we're in selected theaters.
But don't you think everyone will have an opportunity to see it in May on PBS?
Yeah, but we don't want them to wait till May. We want to go,
go see it now.
So tell us, before we go any further, you teased us here. You have to tell us, how do people see it? Just tell us right now so we don't have to wait.
They need to go to our website, justicethomasmovie.com, and it lists where it's playing around the country. And in Southern California, it's in a couple of theaters. It's now in Orange County, and I think it's going to be in Bakersfield and Fresno. I don't know if that's in your audience. But it's in more theaters every week. They should check in, and there's a place to sign up. So if we get enough interest, we can make a screening happen where people have signed up. But they need to, first step is to go to the website, justicethomasmovie.com, where they could also see the trailer so they can get an idea of the film. But I do think it's designed to be in the theater. It's a much more moving experience in the theater. I appeal to your listeners to go and not wait.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. And obviously, if there's more opportunities where it comes closer to where people are, it's an easier way to see it than having to travel. We have to take a quick break. I want to talk a little bit more about Clarence Thomas's legacy. You know, when you watch this film, you get an idea of who the man is. But, you know, there are some issues that I know, and to your credit, you dealt with in your conversations with Justice Thomas. So we're going to talk about that after the break. You're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC. All right. Runaway, Turn Away. Bronski Boys. Beat.
Good one.
Do you remember them?
No. I know the name. I don't.
You know, that's one of the things you don't want to do. We're talking about running away. You confront things straight on, as Clarence Thomas did during the confirmation hearings back when. We're talking to Michael Pack. The new documentary is called Created Equal, Clarence Thomas in his own words. It came out January 31st. And if you want to get more information, justicethomasmovie.com. Go to justicethomasmovie.com. Find out where you can see it. Take a look at the trailer. It's really an impactful trailer. Michael, I want to ask you that we talked a little bit about legacy, and this has become something interesting over the last few weeks since the passing of Kobe Bryant, because, you know, here in LA, Kobe Bryant was a hero, and so many people went, and I went down because I was going to a Clipper game and actually saw all of the stuff that was laid out there. It was really amazing. But people have talked about maybe his legacy is impacted by the rape allegations back in Colorado in the day. And I'm not going to get into that because I don't want to be controversial about that, even though maybe it isn't. Can you talk a little bit about Clarence Thomas and whether he also has an impact on his legacy because of Anita Hill?
I think so. I mean, I think when people think of Clarence Thomas, one thing that quickly comes to mind is Anita Hill's charges. I mean, it is worth remembering that her charges, unlike the ones that leveled against Kobe Bryant, were not physical assault at all, right? It was talking about pornographic movies and other things that were inappropriate at the workplace. No one denies that it's sexual harassment, but it was not physical assault variety. Sometimes younger people are confused and forget that. But he denies it, and she asserts it. So in the film, he talks – we have about 20, 25 minutes on that. He talks about what it was like for him to experience those and what he went through. And after that's over, you can decide whether you find his story credible and you believe him or you believe Anita Hill or neither. But I think that that's right. I mean, people that does involve his legacy. I think at the point that he's passed away, which I hope is not soon, that will come up. But the fact is, you know, when that was over, he gave a very strongly refuted those charges. He gave a very dramatic speech using the phrase, calling it a high-tech lynching. And at the point it was over, the country believed him 2-1, including African-Americans, including women. But over time, because of the Me Too movement, because of the people who believed in Anita Hill being very persistent, it's probably flipped back the other way. So I think that that depending on who you are, that'll affect his legacy. I did make the film because I think his story is way bigger than those hearings, and it's an important story to tell. And those hearings fit into a bigger life pattern. And I think people should evaluate his life as a whole, not neglecting that. We didn't neglect it, but thinking about it in the context of all he lived through and seeing it from his point of view and then deciding what you think after you've gone through that exercise.
If the confirmation hearings were taking place today and Joe Biden wasn't the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, do you think Justice Thomas would be on the Supreme Court?
Well, you know, the Kavanaugh hearings followed a very similar playbook to the Thomas hearings, eerily so, and Kavanaugh is on the Supreme Court. At the end of the day, I think it has to – look, this is – it's not a trial, of course, but it's got a quasi-judicial aspect, and what people are able to prove and back up carries – you know, is significant. And Anita Hill, at the end of the day, it was something said in private, behind closed doors. Anita Hill asserted it, and he asserted it not. And, you know, it's hard to prove that. He had a long career. There were many, many women he worked with that came forward, as they did with Kavanaugh. So, if you know, look, I'm very sympathetic to the Me Too movement, especially where you are out in Hollywood, but everywhere, and in my own business, the news business. And there are a lot of examples of people who really have been guilty of bad behavior for many decades, and it's a great thing that they're finally being called to account for it one way or another. But on the other hand, only the guilty should be punished, not the innocent, and not everybody accused is guilty. And at the end of the day, Anita Hill didn't have enough evidence to convince people, And I think that would happen again today.
Well,
I don't think there's enough there. That's my personal view.
Right, and that may be true.
The documentary doesn't advocate my view. It just gives his view, but that's my personal view.
Even though as a lawyer we look at evidence, but again, there's always intangibles. So it's not always that a person didn't have enough evidence. There are other issues, obviously, that come into play. And, you know, we saw that recently with the Trump impeachment and that sort of thing. So, you know, it's a complicated subject. But what isn't complicated is laughter and crying. Tell us why people are laughing and crying when they see the movie Created Equal.
Well, you know, we talked about it a little bit earlier. I mean, Clarence Thomas' story is one of overcoming huge obstacles all along the way. And I think what's inspiring about his story, to go back to Carrie's opening question, is just that, is that he's able to come back from all these setbacks. He has great resilience. And his unwillingness to define himself as a victim, which he could easily do. I mean, growing up in real poverty, real segregation, suffering many, many setbacks. But in the end of the day, he doesn't define himself that way. He considers his life blessed. He considers it providential even. And I think that that is something that makes people on the way, on that very complicated journey, both cry and laugh. He pulls people along with them. He tells, you know, you're in his, you experience it with him. You experience the ups and downs with him. And I think that it's moving, and it's been moving audiences.
And it's interesting because it's not the typical background that you would expect someone with his beliefs to have had. And maybe that's one of the ironies that make it real, because where he's come from and where he is now is something so different and something we don't see a lot with African-American people in particular. Where is he going? We just have another minute. We're talking about where he was, where he is now. What's happening in the future with Clarence Thomas?
Well, people ask if he's going to retire. I mean, all I can say is the answer that he gave to us was that it's a job for life, and that's how he's treating it. And so he indicated no desire to retire. I believe myself that this is his moment on the Supreme Court. It's drifting in a conservative direction. He's the most senior member of the court. People look to him. A lot of issues that he's brought up over his career from the minority are now maybe possibly going to be in the majority. For instance, his critique of the administrative state, you know, the sort of fourth branch of government, and when we should defer to government agencies and when not. I mean, that was an issue of his a while ago. At first, Scalia was on the other side of that. He brought Justice Scalia over, and now more people are on his side. And so I think this will be an era where he has a huge impact on the jurisprudence of the Supreme Court.
Regardless, I think he'll still probably be fairly quiet, and we may not hear a lot of questions from him as we haven't in the past.
Well, that's right. One of the things about Clarence Thomas is he's stubborn. Just because people think he should ask questions, that's more likely that he will not. But he is very influential, as you said earlier, Alan. He's written more opinions, 30% more than any other sitting Supreme Court justice, more every year than anybody else. And he's very active behind the scenes. He feels that all we, the public, see is oral argument, but the work of the court is mainly both on paper and behind-the-scenes discussions.
Okay.
And you could ask any Supreme Court justice whether he's influential or not, and there is no one who wouldn't say that he is,
Michael,
whether they agree with him or not.
Good luck with the film. We got to run. Create an equal Clarence Thomas in his own words. Go to JusticeThomasMovie.com. JusticeThomasMovie.com. Thanks for being with
us today, Michael.
Thank you both.
All right, that's going to do it. Mom, thanks. Thanks for being here.
Oh, thanks for having
me. And have a safe trip back to Toronto. And we'll look forward to having you on again. Everyone have a great week. Next week, Corey Feldman right here live.
This show is furnished by Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn.